I'm Dr. Kimberly Manning.
And this is Dr. Ashley McMullen. And you're listening to the Human Doctor Podcast, where we explore the human side of medicine, along with teaching, living, learning, and all things in between. Using the power of storytelling, conversation, and connectedness.
Hey, we're two dope academic internal medicine doctors, but we ain't your doctors. So if you perceive anything we say here as medical advice, no, it ain't that. Also, the things we say, they only reflect our brilliant Black woman magic mind and not our employers.
You could have been anywhere, y'all, but you chose to be here with us, and we appreciate you. Let's go.
This meeting is being recorded.
Yes, indeed.
And I hope it's being recorded with excellent sound.
Sounds good on my end, but
does? Okay.
We'll leave it to the post-production team, i.e. me, where it goes from here.
Oh, don't you love how like our operation is compared to everybody else's? I'm like, oh, wow, a lot of stuff you have there. But I mean, I've been considering, you know.
Yeah, I'm proud of our little operation. You know, we do okay.
Me too.
Well, to borrow from the chapter in the book of Dr. Kimberly Manning, how are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 5 this afternoon?
On a scale of 1 to 5 this afternoon, I would like to say that I am a 4.99.
Okay. All right.
And I'm just leaving myself space to, you know, go a little higher.
Mm-hmm.
I just had some really good time with myself this morning. Walked my dog, did a little bit of writing and just, you know, kind of thinking about things. And I actually, I was flying home from California, where you know that I was recently, and I was on a red eye. And I just kind of had one of these sort of divine moments where it was overnight, the flight. So, and there was a young mom on the plane and her baby was just crying and fussy and just would not settle down. And it was thrown into stark relief by how quiet and dark the plane was and how everybody is like trying to get their sleep on because they got to work the next day. And she just looked miserable. And I remember, you know, flying on a flight from, you know, Atlanta to LA before with one of my kids when they were little. And my heart just went out to her. And there was a woman sitting on the aisle over next to me. And she was older than me, probably by about 10 or 12 years. And we kept looking at each other, giving each other that knowing mama look, like, girl, we remember them days. But I think the mom perceived it as us judging her.
Mm.
Like, if she don't settle that baby down. So she kind of, she's standing in the aisle. It's very disruptive because she's like right by us.
Yeah.
And she looks at us and she goes, I am so sorry. And I think our response, it just stunned her so much that we were like, oh, you don't need to be sorry. She's a baby. Babies be babying. You know that, right? And I said, oh gosh, we remember what that was like. And the lady that was older than me, she said, oh yeah, because you know, they don't got no words yet. They can't tell you what they want. And then the older woman looks at her and says, you want me to hold her for you for a little while and give you a break? And I said, yeah. And if after her, I'll hold her for you so you can get some rest. You look tired. And she started crying. She was just holding the baby and she was just crying. And she was like, I have tried everything. I've tried to nurse her. I've tried to do this. I've tried to do that. She's like, I don't know what I should do. And by the time she said all that, the baby had fallen asleep.
Oh my God.
And well, it was so beautiful because I really think that the kindness that she was met with in that moment, it was what like they both needed for the baby and her to have enough peace for the baby to settle down.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of beautiful.
Wow.
I love that moment.
I love that.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, I didn't get to hold the baby. I was kind of sad about that.
Oh, I love it. I love
it. It was good. It was good. So that makes me a 4.99. What about you? What are you today?
I'm like a 4.95. I mean, it was pretty hard to top last week owing to the fact that I got to see you in real life.
And I got to watch you teach.
Yes. And she also taught me how to parallel park. So thank you for those life skills.
Oh my gosh, y'all. Please let me. I am so proud of that. It's like such a big sister moment. Girl, wait, y'all, we were in San Francisco in the heart of the city. And Ashley was trying to get into a parking space and she was like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get in there. I was like, oh yeah, you can get in that space. She's like, I'm not good at parallel parking. I said, but I am. And I ushered in the spirit of my baby and told her how to do it. And she got right in that little tight spot. Thought, I really want to know, little grasshopper, what's gonna happen next time. You have no.
No, I did it again after that.
You did.
Yes.
Excited. I was so
Thank
excited.
you. Yeah. No, yeah. She came through because I was trying to show off. I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna pick you up from the airport. We're gonna go to dinner at this nice little restaurant that I've been to like 3 times, like in the city. But the thing that I hate the most about driving in San Francisco is the parking. And so I was sweating bullets because I knew it was like rush hour is gonna be cramped.
Right.
And I'm over here trying to look like I know what I'm doing, but
Right.
she saw right through me.
And now you out here, a parallel parking
Yes.
electric car driving boss.
Yes.
Look at you.
I
See?
tried. I tried.
I bet you y'all's mentors didn't teach you how to parallel park. How about that? Tell these other mentors to do better.
Yes, now you are checking all the boxes and more. So thank you. Yes.
Well, listen, that is not what the people came here for today. They have been checking their calendars, and what they realize is, well, I believe Dr. Manning told a story last week, which means the bye week is over and it is time to come for what we come for, which is a story from Ashley McMullen. This is not an exaggeration. Everybody I know that I'm cool with, they keep telling me about how much they want to be friends with Ashley and how much they enjoy her stories. I'm like, you do know I can hear you. I am on this podcast as well. But so for all your fans out there, what is the what, sis?
Well, yes, I will tell you the what. The what is adversary.
Adversary, dang.
I know, right? I told you I had to be up in this thesaurus now that I know that Jolay is keeping tabs. And I will also, point out that, as kind as Dr. Manning is in, making me feel so loved and appreciated, we all know who the real boss storyteller is on this podcast.
Ashley. Yes. You was too slow. You
I
was too
know,
slow.
dang, man. See, in any case, we'll talk more about that offline. But yes, I did come with a story in mind this morning. One that I've never told before, but one that is fresh on my mind because what I was doing this morning as I was doing my own little point of self-reflection, I actually was looking back at reflection pieces that I had written like a long time ago, like during residency. And that's one of the things I always encourage trainees to do now. Like, write down your experiences as much as you can, especially the ones that move you. You don't know what those stories will do for you later on. And I hadn't looked at this experience in a long time. So it was really cool to see how I was writing, what I was feeling, and just kind of immerse myself back in that moment. So I'll start the story in 2018, which is my last year of residency. This was a time that I've alluded to in many respects, that this was like a peak burnout time for me. I was nearing the end of residency. I found myself feeling pretty proficient medically, but very burnt out emotionally, particularly with some of the more challenging patients. I was on an outpatient block, so thankfully this was a little bit more of a chill month for me, meaning I was just in my 9-to-5 clinics. I was rotating through our diabetes clinic at our safety net hospital, which is SF General. The way that clinic worked at the time for residents who were rotating through, you don't have any assigned patients. They have a slot of patients who are like booked for the day, and the residents just kind of pick whoever and go see them and then present to the attending physicians.
That was your weekly clinic.
This wasn't a weekly clinic. It was an elective clinic. So
Okay,
I
gotcha.
kind of was just rotating through. I think I did a couple sessions that month.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. A clinic that I didn't spend a ton of time in, but there was a lot of overlap with the patients that I did see on a weekly basis, just in my own continuity clinic. So I get there and you're kind of independently tasked with finding patients who've checked in and choosing kind of at will folks to see. And I randomly picked up a chart for this woman who was middle-aged, I want to say like mid to late 50s, predominantly Spanish speaking, but pretty proficient in English as well. Looked like this person had come through the emergency room the week before for something completely unrelated, but during the course of that encounter was found to have really high blood sugar and was started on a medication and told to come to this clinic. So other than that, I didn't really see much else about her in the chart. Wasn't clear if she like carried this diagnosis for a while. So I was kind of going in needing to kind of start from scratch to kind of get the whole story from this person. So I went into the room and I see this woman, who just looked like so run down, just really kind of hunched over. Her eyes looked very tired and like, it was just like this weariness about her. And again, this is me in my kind of resident doctor mode. I hadn't quite developed the space and the attention to really feel all the more empathetic feels that I have on my approach now. So I kind of started at the usual, just, "Hi, my name is Dr. McMullen. Thank you for coming to clinic today. Like, do you know why you're here?" And she actually couldn't tell me why she was there. She was just like, "They told me I had to come to this appointment, so here I am." So I'm getting a little bit more of the history, and she's thinking back and she's like, "Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, about 10 years ago, I think someone may have told me I had diabetes. They prescribed some medication at that point, but the copays were too high, so I just stopped going, and that was that." So I keep going and I get to the family history. She thinks back, she's like, "Yeah, I think I had an aunt with diabetes, my sister, I'm pretty sure she has it, a number of folks in our family." It's like, "Okay, do you have any children?" She's like, "Got two children, one son, and then, oh yeah, I had my daughter, but she passed away last year." And she said it kind of matter-of-factly, like almost like giving me permission to like move on without delving further. And so I asked a little bit more. I was like, "If you don't mind me asking, how old was your child when they passed?" "About 20 years old." "Would you tell me a little bit more about what happened?" She kind of sighs and kind of quickly explained. It was just like, "Yeah, her name, and I'll say her name was Anna. Anna had diabetes, and she had this illness that she'd had her entire life, and she was always in and out of the hospital. And this last hospitalization she had, she didn't make it out." And as soon as she said that, like my heart started like thumping through my chest. Because at that point, I knew exactly who her daughter was. And it didn't occur to me until that exact moment that I had seen this patient before, the mother. So going back 2 years ago, or 2 years before that, my intern year, so my first year of residency, I think that everybody probably in residency can think of like a handful of patients that, those are the patients who like everybody has touched, or many people have touched in some respect, because they're in and out of the hospital so much. And this woman's child was one of those patients. This individual, this patient, like I said, I'll call her Anna. That was not her actual name, of course, but she had a rare disease. And even though this person was a young adult, they were effectively like a child, couldn't really interact, couldn't really speak. She was always in and out for a number of things. She had a lot of different, complex medical issues. But among those things, she had a complicated form of diabetes. And so it was always a task to try to manage that in the hospital. But what was most memorable about her coming in, not only was she so sick, like there were multiple times where this person like almost died and didn't. What became the topic of conversation was more about people's interactions with her mother, because it was always so adversarial, like so contentious. That was our perception of it. Thinking back to my intern year self and how we were all perceiving it was just like, this individual is coming back in the hospital for another issue. To us, it doesn't seem like she has much of quality of life. Why are we doing all these extraneous things? Like, why can't her mother understand that this is futile? Why is she fighting with us tooth and nail on like every single thing? And things became particularly contentious anytime we wanted to discharge her. I only had Anna on my service like once as an intern. It was, actually one of her more benign stays, meaning that, there wasn't any like near death like experiences. But I remember vividly, like the evening I was trying to sign out, I was literally like typing the sign out, and I got the page from the nurse that, "Hey, mom is at the bedside and she wants to talk to you," which is like everybody's massive eye roll. We're trying to get out of the hospital. And now we got to start this conversation, keeping in mind, you know, one of the things that we didn't talk about in the resident room with that was that this woman was having to work during the day and then show up in the evening. And that was the only time she could actually like check in to see what was going on. I remember sitting there and going through this like very detailed discharge document. And it took like 45 minutes. We were going back and forth. You know, we finally got to a point where she agreed and was like comfortable taking her home. And I walked out of that room like I had just won a battle. Like, like the nurse high-fived me. We were just like, yeah, like we were able to discharge her. Like we're getting her out of the hospital. But I didn't win anything. Like, in my heart and in everybody else's heart, you know, this was strictly just a hot potato moment. We didn't really solve any issues. All that that meant was that this was no longer my responsibility. And I say that just honestly, and I'm not proud of it, but that was the situation. And so we got through another discharge. I remember coming back day after day, checking the overnight admission, seeing if she came back in, and she didn't. And then I rotated off. I remember, I think it was like my second year. It had to have been months after that. Of course, there were multiple admissions to other, to our hospital, other hospitals. And then one day Amanda came home. I think Amanda was on an ICU rotation and she was just like, hey, do you remember that patient, Anna, that, you know, you were always talking about? And I was like, yeah. She's like, well, apparently she died at another hospital. I didn't know the circumstances, but I remember that sinking feeling in my stomach where it was just like, this is somebody's daughter. Like, that really, really fucking sucks. Particularly thinking about the ways in which this mom had probably coordinated her entire life around fighting for this child. And recognizing it wasn't so much that she was just having to fight for her daughter's care. She was like fighting us to get us to care. I'm literally like flashing all this back in my mind as I'm sitting in front of this woman.
Wow.
In the diabetes clinic. And she does not recognize me. And I wouldn't expect her to, just given all the different providers.
Sure.
But part of the reason I didn't recognize her was just like, she looked completely deflated. When we were in the hospital, like going toe to toe over discharge plans, she was like suited up and like ready to go, like fierce.
Yeah.
And now she's here. And I can see that over these last, this last decade of fighting for her child, she's been completely neglecting her own health. I didn't go any further than that. But in my heart, I was just like, oh my God, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry. Because for us in that moment, and I say us, but I, you know, really, I can only speak for myself. Nobody was on her team. We were team discharge. We were team medicine. We were team efficiency. I mean, I can't say that like I sat there and like I poured my heart out and we cried together and got her on her medications and everything was cool.
Right.
I didn't see her again after that. And it was just so random by chance that I happened to pick up her chart that day. But I also felt like I, like it's almost like I didn't deserve to take that time to ask for her forgiveness. You know, who knows what all she went through. But, you know, the thing that did occur in the aftermath of that encounter was that I was changed forever for many reasons. I mean, of course, you know, we talk now a lot about empathy, you know, what you've said before about like somebody has to be team you and recognizing like we as medical staff, like we shouldn't be adversaries with our patients or a patient's family when they're really just trying to advocate for their loved ones.
Yeah.
It can feel contentious and uncomfortable and sometimes it gets there. But really, like, we should try our best to be on the same team with the folks that we're caring for. And at the same time, it's just like, as an internist, I think that there's a lot to be said around how parents are protective over their children. And I think that we don't see that, or at least don't come into contact with that, or have always have the skill set as to how to navigate those types of boundaries. But in any case, like, this patient was nonverbal. You know, to us, we couldn't really appreciate the nuances or her quality of life, and she needed someone there to fight for her. So I'm so glad also that I wrote that story down, because I hadn't, you know, circled back on that in a while, and like reading those words, I was just like, I was right back in that moment.
Right.
So.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, people being difficult or angry or contentious, I think the older you get, the more you realize is that it pretty much almost never has anything to do with the person in front of them. It has always to do with something else. But you know, when you're tired too, you can't feel that. You can't feel that. And I mean, as a resident, you know, in your defense, residency just kind of sets you up to be like on a bias or a bad behavior landmine, right? All the things that will make you know, not have good impulse control, like being rushed, being overworked, going through the motions, being sleep deprived, being hungry. Those are all the things that kind of make you just like, oh, can I just get this over with, and cause you to kind of dehumanize patients. I think as I listen and hear about that mom, it, you know, there's another piece of her that I feel myself drawn to, and that is just like, as a fellow mom, nothing puts you on the hind legs more than your children and somebody trying to do something to one of your kids. The most I have ever gone into a space and been a bull in the china shop is if I thought you were trying to do something to one of my kids. I thought my child was being treated unfairly. And I can't even imagine if that was in the healthcare system, because the healthcare system, unfortunately, but particularly for people who are resource poor, is no joke, right? And it is not kind. It's not kind to you if you've got resources, but it's not kind if you don't have many resources. So yeah, I can imagine like walking into spaces on edge, ready to fight. And because many of the times you must. So I mean, you know, it's crazy too. Like, you think she probably tried all the other strategies. She probably tried to kill us with kindness, you know, and that didn't work. At the time that you cared for the patient, I'm not certain what her age was, but I will tell you also, one part that people don't think about is how absolutely traumatizing it is to the parents of children with chronic disease to make the transition from the pediatric setting to the adult setting. Because, you know, because the world of pediatrics is like, I mean, everybody rallies. You end up, you know, with multiple hospitalizations on pediatric wards, you get the same nurses over and over. There's the child life people and a whole organized way to support a child that's in the hospital, even a child who, you know, has a host of needs that are different than other children, right? But in the adult setting, that plug is just pulled, yanked, like boom. Here you go. Here's your, you know, three hots and a cot, you know? That's it. Yeah, and we see that a lot in our patients living with sickle cell anemia and some other chronic diseases. It's so hard. And so to cope, people come up with all sorts of ways to cope.
No, I mean, all these kind of nuances of that experience really, to the best of my memory, like did not really register in my psyche. And of course, me and my experience and my team were just kind of a cog in the wheel of this ever-churning like healthcare experience. So it's true, like, there were plenty of experience before us and those after us. And I think it's also important for me to clarify for those who may have been wondering, like, given the severity of this diagnosis, like this person's longevity was not going to be long. So, it doesn't surprise me that this individual passed in the hospital, but I think that the way that it happened absolutely could have been prevented and less traumatic.
And I think the other piece is, regardless of what's going on with your child, there's no good time to lose your child. I remember when I was doing pediatrics, seeing parents of children who had been, you know, very, very ill for the majority of their lives, and then seeing them pass away, but how their entire identity had gotten built into being the parent of this child. So what do I do now? Where do I go? And it's you almost, some part of you, and as ashamed as I am to think this, I remember thinking when I was a young person, like, oh, you must be relieved, you know. But that's because, you know, we can't see through love's myopic view. They can. We are seeing this patient who requires all these things, and they're like, that's my baby.
So, I recall this story, not to, have folks affirm and just like, you did the best you can. Like, I really hope that someone will hear this, particularly a trainee, and help to pump the brakes or throw a flag on the play. when these, not just patients just like this, but any patient who's coming into the hospital a lot, and being able to look at them with fresh eyes and new empathy becomes harder and harder. Challenge yourself to do otherwise, because you don't know like who else is behind the curtain, who is like living this difficulty in addition to our patients. Like, just try to be the one person on that on that patient's team, even when everybody else is giving you permission not to.
And check in with yourself. You know, how am I doing today? What am I on a scale of 1 to 5? If I'm at a 2, maybe I need to, you know, go for a little walk outside of the hospital for a second and then go see the patient.
Yeah.
Because I think that, again, you know, oftentimes our strategies when we talk to our learners about things like this, about meeting patients with humanism, we talk about this like altruistic thing that the right thing to do is to be good, but you have to have something, you know, to give.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot be wrung dry and then expected to drop sweet drops of goodness onto people, right? You just can't. So, but sometimes all it takes is just a minute.
Yeah.
I'll ride the elevator at Grady sometimes, just a ride on the elevator. Somebody get on the elevator, say something to me that make me laugh. Or I walk out and see somebody standing out in a vestibule singing a gospel song for no reason whatsoever. And I'll just be like, I love Grady. Let me go up here and see this patient. I don't feel like seeing. So yeah, like not only to throw a flag on the plate for how you're going to treat the patient, throw a flag on the plate to check on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How am I doing?
It's real.
Yeah.
Well, sis, I appreciate you listening to my story on this 15th episode of this season, which means that we are due for a little break, but not a long break, because we will be back in May
mm-hmm.
for a certain event that we've been promoting for the last like several episodes.
Which is the Society of General Internal Medicine National Meeting.
Mm-hmm.
In Boston, Massachusetts,
yes,
where I've never been before.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Just like a moment of gratitude to the SGIM for affirming our work in this way by inviting us to join our academic home, but, you know, to bring this labor of love into that space too. I'm very appreciative of that.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah. So let's make sure that we don't embarrass nobody.
Got it. Done.
All right, sis. Well, hopefully, you know, you continue to parallel park like the boss I know you are. I love you, and I look forward to seeing your face in 3 dimensions in Boston, Massachusetts very soon.
I love you too. And when I hop on that flight to go 5 hours across the country, if there is a child crying, I may not offer to hold it, but I will nod in solidarity.
That's what's up. That might be all that's needed. All right, sis.
Peace. That wraps up this week's episode of the Human Doctor Podcast.
Special thanks to our favorite brother gastroenterologist, Dr. Chuma Obinime, for the beats. Shout out to the Dr. Ashley McMullen for editing and production.
Mad love to our podcast family at The Nocturnist and The Clinical Problem Solvers, our Med Twitter fam.
And especially, shout out to all of you, our listeners.
Until next week, remember,
we see you and you are enough. Holla! Holla.